On that note, we'll begin by closing our eyes and doing a meditation to get ourselves into the room, our big, very big virtual room that spreads all over the world. Just set an intention to have no intention, which is simply the often difficult process of simply letting go of expectations and ideas and thoughts about the way you want things to go. Just relax your body into the chair. Really feel your whole body sinking into the chair. You can become aware of this force we call gravity. It's binding it to the chair, and the chair to the floor, and the floor to the earth. This mysterious power that holds us all here, so we don't just go flying off into space. And notice you don't have to do anything to get it. It just happens. This just happening is the key to everything. It's the key to the state that people call awakening, which is really a fearlessness, an absence of anxiety, a calm contentment, which seems elusive. But that's only when we look for it somewhere but right here and right now. So bring your attention now to your breath. You can purposely open your heart, let your breath go deeper, slower, very intentional. Again, no expectations. Try to keep the focus of attention just being the simple act of breathing. The mind begins to wander, fine. That's what minds do. Just say, thank you for sharing, and just bring your attention back to where you want it to be, which is on your breath. Just breathing. And you know that while most of our breathing takes place through our lungs and our diaphragm, your skin is breathing all the time. There's a constant interaction with the environment going on. You don't have to do a thing for that to happen. There's this constant exchange, constant flow of energy, of particles, of everything happening on a level that we can't perceive with our senses. So let your attention move now more into the body. Just the feeling, the actual sensation of the body. It's this vibrant, alive, and quite mysterious flow of energy. And as we do that, you'll find that your mind will start doing things with the word body, and it'll show you a picture of the body. You say, thank you, we really don't need you right now. Because with your eyes closed, there is no picture of the body. That form exists only to the eye, and to the mind that holds that image. Notice that that form doesn't exist when you're just feeling the sensations. Let yourself do a kind of a slow scan, starting at the top of your head and just gradually working downward, just relaxing, surrendering really to the chair, to the sensations. Starting right at the crown of your head, you can actually feel your head releasing. It moves down across your face. Maybe a little, one of those little half Buddha smiles. All the way around your head, your neck, your shoulders, just moving all the way down your torso, your chest. Just surrendering to the moment, to the chair, to the couch. Notice the body has no ambition, no expectations. It's just this river of aliveness. Down through your lower torso, pelvic floor, down your legs. All the way down to your feet. Feel the energy of being pulled towards the earth and moving away from it simultaneously. And there's no expectation here. There's just flow of sensation. Bring your attention to your upper arms and let those kind of fall into relaxation and let that move down to your forearm, to your wrists. Let your hands totally relax. Spread the fingers apart a little bit so you can feel each finger as it relaxes. And even feel the space in between the fingers. Notice you can do that. Feel the outline, the space that defines it. Part of the flow. Notice any sounds that are in the room. The temperature. And see if you can just let go or move past the notion that there's some kind of a separation, some kind of a boundary between you, that is this flow of energy that is the body and the flow of energy that is the room. In this place of total perception, just sensing the motion of the energy, there's no distinction really. Even my voice is just another ripple of aliveness in this space. And notice the space itself, the room, the flow of energy, the sounds that you're hearing, the feelings, the temperature, the feeling of the chair. They're all occurring in this very subtle space. So subtle, it's indetectable. There's no attributes. There's ripples running through it, but it's not a ripple. It's just present. Like a container that has no walls. And yet this is not like the cold space of outer space. It's very real, very present, even though it's not detectable by our senses, it's very much here. It's not a cold or empty space. It's full. And yet it's empty. This is the paradox of awareness or Buddha nature. You can't say it's empty and you can't say it's full. It just is. Just be aware, even if your mind has wandered or there's a sensation in the body that may be uncomfortable or difficult, stay aware of the space that it's in, as well as the sensation itself. Just regard it. No attempt to change it, no agenda about it. It's just witnessing it. As if you were the space itself witnessing it. And the space, of course, has no agenda. It's not trying to accomplish anything. Pure witnessing, pure awareness. And notice that vantage point. That pure awareness is right there with you. Even you are aware of that awareness. And what if that simple, direct, open, spacious, agenda-free awareness was you? Real, absolute, unchanging, unborn you, the self. Just take that in as a what if. Let's not make it an assertion or an affirmation, just what if. Just an open-hearted inquiry. What if I was the space, the self-aware space in which all my experience happened? And leave it as an open-ended question. Okay, take another deep breath. Give a silent thank you to the sensations of the body, the experience of the space, the awareness, the mystery and miracle of it all. And to yourself for choosing to be here. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Take a sip of tea if you haven't. Once again, welcome everyone. I decided to name this retreat The Power of Loving Awareness. Because oftentimes in non-dual teaching and self-inquiry, it can get kind of abstract. Pure awareness, pure consciousness, right? Emptiness, shunyata. It can seem kind of abstract. And so there can be often a tendency to put such an emphasis on the emptiness, the nothingness, spaciousness, that we miss the character of awareness. And the character of awareness is what we would have to call love. And when I say love, everyone will have ideas about what love is coming to their mind. And indeed, there are many different kinds. There's the love of a parent with the child. There's the love among siblings. There's romantic love. There's altruistic love. There's love of one's work, one of one's hobbies. Sometimes just the love of life, the love of nature. It takes innumerable forms. And it's always recognizable. Nobody has to tell you if you're in love. There's no checklist you need to go through. You just know. Even that first love you had at, 12 or 13 or whatever it was, you knew what it was. Nobody had to tell you. It was just there. Now, how do you define love? You take away all of those things, and all of those are love, right? You say, oh yeah, that's love, and that's love, and that's love, and that's love, right? So what then is love? Just love. What is it without referring to some kind of particular form or manifestation it took? It's kind of like trying to describe music without humming a tune. You simply can't do it. It's like this spacious, unknowable, empty potential is there all the time. As if it wasn't, there'd be no manifestation. Potential for music has to be there before there can be a song. And it remains empty and unknown until it is expressed. But does that mean it doesn't exist? This is the nature of loving awareness. Seeing that the character of pure awareness, which is simply you're experiencing all the time, is love. Pure awareness is like your eye. I always use this, it's a great metaphor. Your eye makes no assessment of what it sees. Right? The light gets there, it gets in. The eye isn't going, oh no, you can't get in. Oh, you, come. Right? It's not the bounce, there's no bouncer at that door. The light just gets in. Boom. And the moment it gets in, we're aware of it, aren't we? So the consciousness of it also has no bouncer. It's just there. And then That light is a form. That form is, it becomes a sensation. It now gets all sorts of stuff added onto it, stories and ideas, and kinds of becomes a perception. Then it becomes an object of mind, right? And oh, this is what it is. This is my aunt. I can't stand her. She always smells, right? And now all of a sudden we're assessing it according to what? Conditioning, arbitrary. It's arbitrary, isn't it? Because the very same image to somebody else could be, have a completely different meaning. Right? You know, a grove of trees to a real estate developer is a pain in the ass. But to somebody who wants to walk in those trees, it's everything. To something who regards life as precious, it's a miracle. It's a mysterious happening. Same trees, completely different meaning. And notice that all of that happens because there is awareness. Now, when you say awareness, like the eye just says, everybody gets in. Isn't that love? No judgment, no assessment, no criticism. Nothing but a pure acceptance of what is. Even beyond our labels on it, to pure experience. Now, this loving awareness can become a practice to regard things through loving awareness. And what does that mean? What that means is that the moment I see the pattern about my aunt who smells that I don't like, I put a stop to it. I said, no, okay, well, that's how I've perceived her. Is that what's really there? What is it that I directly experienced that I later then put all this stuff on it, which had I had a different upbringing or a different experience when I was in third grade would have a completely different meaning? Which means none of that's true. Not one bit of it is actually true. What's true then? Just that pure experience. Like during the meditation where there was just the experience of the body. Without even the idea of a body. And what happens? The body begins, the conceptual body, begins to fall away. This idea that somehow I am bounded by the skin, that I end the skin. It's just a concept. It's just an idea. And if you look closely, you'll find that my experience of the body is just an experience of something closer than something farther away. But me, the one aware of the body, is still removed. Yeah, the car that goes by outside, yeah, there's that distance I'm removed from. But my thoughts, my feelings, my sensations, while they're really close, are still, there's still a distance there, except for the thought that says, I am the body. I am this. But if I was that, I wouldn't be able to see it. Your eye can't see itself. You try all at once, but it can't. It can't do it. A knife can't cut itself. Your finger can't touch itself. Because it is that. So whatever I perceive isn't me. It is just something appearing to me. And this gets to the, you know, the big question of self-inquiry, of non-dual self-inquiry, and that is, well, then who am I? Who is it, or what is it, that's perceiving these things? And the beauty is that the practice is that the moment I ask that question, your mind is going to start giving you answers. All those answers refer to something perceived. Because if the eye can't see itself, the eye can't describe itself. So if you can't perceive yourself, you cannot describe yourself. So all descriptions out the window. And what you're left with is the answer, the same answer that Bodhidharma gave to the emperor when he asked him, "Who are you?" He said, "I don't know." Now, what does that make you feel like? When somebody gets up here and tells you, you're never going to know. The quest for who am I does not end in an answer. So then who are you? Get a little tension there, right? Like, what? Wait, well, what's the payoff? What's enlightenment? According to Huang Po, a 12th century Zen master, all the Buddhas and all sentient beings are nothing but the one mind. Even the Buddha doesn't exist outside of this one mind. And when they use the term mind, it's not the way we normally use mind. And we normally think of mind in terms of the thinking mind. But in this period of Zen Buddhism, that was not the way they perceived it. They would refer to the thinking mind, and then they would refer to the one mind, which we would, I think, probably use the term pure awareness. And does anything happen outside of awareness? Can you get outside of awareness and check? You can't do it. So it leaves us with adopting a completely different approach to all knowledge. All knowledge. Because, you know, if I'm going to describe this little thing, you know, this little charger for my earbuds, right? I can describe it. I can look at it. Yeah, it's black and it's kind of oval shaped and rounds, and it's got a USB-C port and little things in there. Oh, look, and it lights up when I open the door, close the door. And so I can describe it, right, as one thing describes another. And I can stand back from anything. And so that kind of objective knowledge, subject-object relationship, works everywhere. This is the, you know, classical analysis scientific method. It works everywhere in the universe except here, because I can't do that. I can't stand aloof from myself and look back and then say, oh, and describe myself. Can't do it. So in one fell swoop, we have just eliminated all human knowledge. How does that feel? And we haven't relegated it to the trash heap. It works everywhere else, right? You know, I need to know how to work the blender and drive a car and things like that. Right? It just does not work when the mission is to know yourself. And this self-knowledge is what they call awakening. It's what's called enlightenment. It's what's called Bodhi, or the Bodhi mind. That's all it is. Knowing yourself directly, without any kind of knowledge input into it. Because the moment knowledge is there, it's conceptual. It's one thing describing another. This is kind of the Zen approach. Whether it be just sitting, like in Shikan Taza, which we're going to try a little later, maybe tomorrow, maybe today, or it's trying to penetrate a cone, a koan, you know, one of those weird little stories that makes no sense. In fact, let's do one right now. And I'll answer it on Sunday. Some of you have heard this one already. I'm sorry. But how old is the Buddha? Well, just take that in. I'll give you another. I'll give you another. For those of you who already know this and know the answer, right? Some of you do. Does anybody know the answer to it? Okay, so I'll give you another one. If Dhammapada Buddha rode upon an elephant, and Shakyamuni Buddha rode upon a tiger, what will Maitreya Buddha ride upon? Maitreya Buddha is the Buddha that is to come, the Buddha of love, the next Buddha after the Buddha we know, the historical Buddha that we know. Maitreya Buddha. So Dhammapada was before him. Dhammapada rode an elephant. Shakyamuni rode on a tiger. What will Maitreya ride on? Pick either one of those you want to do. And I won't torment you like a Zen master and never give you the answer. Because that's the proper way to do it. You just kind of get thrown that bone and you have to sit with it forever until it becomes clear. But that's the whole point. Right? And all I can say about koan practice is become the poem, the koan. Be it. Maybe I'll give you a hint on Saturday. Maybe not. At any rate, I'd like to take a moment here for anybody who would like to speak and say, well, what your experience is so far and what you had hoped to gain from being here. And that's okay, even though in the meditation I said set all that aside. Loving awareness doesn't remove anything. It accepts everything. True non-duality is the dance between the absolute and the relative. It is not explaining the relative away in terms of the absolute. Oh, it's all an illusion. It doesn't exist. Nobody's here. There's nothing to do. Right? If you said that to a Zen master, you would get the stick upside your head. Oh, nobody here, huh? Whack. Nobody here? Whack. To bring us back to this place that is the true middle way. So it's an embrace of that pure emptiness, that spaciousness. And at the same time, embracing this miracle and mystery of a human birth. I mean, where the hell did this come from? I mean, I didn't plan it. I didn't decide one day I was going to create a universe full of humans, right? This thing just popped out of nowhere. We call it our birth, but it's actually just this sudden arising in the midst of this emptiness. Which means I embrace everything that when people bring their desires, their aspirations, what they hope for the world, what they hope for themselves. We dance between the two. We set them aside and experience the nothingness. Then we embrace them and experience the somethingness. And the only word I can possibly give to that is love. So loving awareness does not dismiss anything, which means my desires, my lusts, my fears, my hatreds, my anger, my disappointments. Anybody here not have any anger or disappointment in their lives? You get your money back. And what do? Get rid of them? Loving awareness doesn't get rid of anything. It says, oh, you too. Okay, come. Now, this is exactly the opposite of self-help. I know. But this has been that golden thread that has gone through all great spiritual traditions, including Krishnamurti and Nisargadatta and all the great teachers. It's been this theme. I loved Krishnamurti because of his emphasis on relationship and how significant and important it is. Whereas if you took a purely Vedantic or non-dual approach, there's no such thing as relationship, right? How could there be a relationship when there's only one? Well, it's true. There is no relationship, and there's nothing but relationships. That's a koan in and of itself, isn't it? Because our minds are something that always wants to take a position. It always, okay, this is the truth. Oh, okay, got it now. And then something comes along and whacks you. Right? And then, maybe that's not the truth. Right?